Welcome to the Damage Report on a Wednesday, a big news Wednesday, not with John Iadarola, but with Francesca Fiorentini. That's right, I am here. Get used to it. And I'm here with Mr. J.R. Jackson of The Watch List. J.R., coming off of just finishing your show, how you doing?
Hey, that means I'm primed and ready. It's like a warm up. You know, I'm a former athlete. Sometimes you have to stretch, warm up, move quickly. That was my warm up session. Now we're going for the marathon.
Just knuckles cracked, all the things you forgot to say, things you want to lay in more.
Absolutely.
To jokes that didn't land, metaphor. I get that all the time. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to get it this time. I'm going to stick the landing.
Always rethink my jokes before I tell them. And I wish I had the confidence you had.
And then there's people like me who just tell the same ones over and over again, and they don't get the laugh that you wanted. But that's okay. There's so much to get into. Some good stuff, some sad stuff, some things that need to be mocked, like parents not wannabe parents saying, "We will adopt your baby now that your rights have been taken away."
Sure.
Love that story. That's been memed, rightfully memed. The right gets triggered again and again and again and again and again. Even when they win, they find a way to be triggered. And then a few cretins get what's coming to them. But while you're here, remember, this is still the Damage Report. You still have to like and share the stream right now. Still got to let the people on YouTube know that you don't just look at like kitten videos and like yoga videos. You know what I'm saying?
I was going to say fail videos. I enjoy those a lot.
Yeah, or like planking video. You know, like mix it up.
Oh, I forgot about those.
Mix it up. Right? 8-minute workout, 7-minute workout, 5-minute workout. So yes, so good to have you guys here. We'll be reading your comments. So send in those super chats, send in those comments, send in your thoughts. But of course, we have to begin this show with this.
I left the office and went down to the dining room, and I noticed that the door was propped open and the valet was inside the dining room changing the tablecloth off of the dining room table. He motioned for me to come in and then pointed towards the front of the room near the fireplace mantle and the TV, where I first noticed there was ketchup dripping down the wall and there's a shattered porcelain plate on the floor. The valet had articulated that the president was extremely angry at the Attorney General's AP interview and had thrown his lunch against the wall, which was causing them to have to clean up. So I grabbed a towel and started wiping the ketchup off of the wall to help the valet out. And he said something to the effect of, he's really ticked off about this. I would stay clear of him for right now. He's really, really ticked off about this right now.
Mm-hmm. There we have the Mick meltdown from the former president, Donald Trump. And relayed by Cassidy Hutchinson, who was testifying before the January 6th committee. This is the sixth time the committee has met for their hearings. If this was a surprise emergency hearing yesterday, I was like, it's gonna be this documentarian. You guys are gonna wait till you get a load of it. And no sooner could those words have left my mouth, but then we saw Cassidy Hutchinson, who is a former aide to White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows. Again, Meadows, who's been refusing to testify in front of the January 6th committee. Basically, we have the next best thing, perhaps someone who will be even more honest. There she is explaining that after Donald Trump saw his Attorney General Bill Barr speak to the AP about how he did not see any fraud in the election, this is December 1st of 2020, he took his plate of what we can only imagine is, I don't know, a fish fillet, because that's what you wouldn't want to put ketchup on. But of course, this guy does. And he threw it against the wall. And I don't know, the part that stuck out to me was, yes, explosive, ridiculous temper tantrum. But also, Cassidy helped clean it up, helped the valet clean it up. JR, have you ever thrown a plate of food against a wall? JR, you're on mute, my friend.
Why do I do this? Why do I do things like this?
I do it all the time.
First of all, no, I've not thrown a plate of food against the wall, mostly because I know I'd probably have to clean it up, which is maybe part of his motivation for doing it, because someone else always has to clean up after this guy when it comes to food or just the things that he says. This has always been one of those things. If you are erratic and you don't have much control over your emotions, you do things like this. I've said the same thing for guys who punch walls and stuff like that, and they break their hand and go, oh my God, I can't believe when I punch this brick wall that my knuckles would actually break. Yeah, bro, maybe think before you do something like this. But this goes into how unhinged and disconnected he was from anyone saying anything to him that's like, hey, what you just did and said is untrue, and he knows it. But he needs everyone to surround him and circle the wagons around him and his line, no matter what those things are and no matter how much those lies get those people that are supposed to be loyal to him in trouble. So he needs to have these large displays of anger, violence, and I'm in control, I'm the boss still. Yeah. And throwing plates against the wall is just one of those instances.
Absolutely, this is mafia moves, and it reminds me, you know, there's a lot of like, you know, domestic violence cases that involve, you know, people throwing plates against walls. One time I threw pesto in my brother's face when I was like 11. And like, I've never been allowed to be forgiven for that or never forgotten. But obviously, we're gonna go from lighthearted to more severe, because if only it stopped at throwing a plate of food against a wall. Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony continued. The second part we should look at is how much the innermost workings of the Trump administration, how much his staff knew very, very in and out that what was going to take place on January 6th could be a crime and would be considered a crime if it were to be carried out. And specifically, if Donald Trump himself and White House staff were with the Capitol rioters themselves. So let's take a look at this.
I saw Mr. Cipollone right before I walked out onto West Exec that morning. And Mr. Cipollone said something to the effect of, please make sure we don't go up to the Capitol, Cassidy. Keep in touch with me. We're going to get charged with every crime imaginable if we make that movement happen.
And do you remember which crimes Mr. Cipollone was concerned with?
In the days leading up to the 6th, we had conversations about potentially obstructing justice or defrauding the electoral count.
Oh, she got specific. Defrauding justice, disrupting the electoral count. Very specific crimes there that Pat Cipollone was Trump's one of his defense attorneys or his legal advisors. So in addition to many others who were warning him not to do all of these things. And again, we've heard the plan A, the plan B, and this seems to be like the plan C, which is a coup, storm the Capitol, make it violent. You know, plan A and B, meaning find some evidence of fraud, I don't care where, and throw, cast doubt on the election, and then send some alternate electors. So we have all these nonviolent solutions. Now we get to the day of, and Cipollone knows that it's a crime. Cipollone knows. And so, JR, we've been talking this whole time about like, why didn't he go up to the Capitol? Oh, so he said he was right behind you, but he wasn't. And here you see that everyone around Trump was like, we can't go. The last thing we can do is go.
Again, because they're looking to protect him from himself, he makes these decisions. He sees this opportunity, I think, because again, as you mentioned, plan C is we tried all the other illegal activity that's supposed to be kind of looking like it's normal activity with fake electors and disrupting this and asking local officials to then overturn their election results and hey, let's question those voting machines. All this process that didn't work up to that point because there was just a few people here and there that wouldn't cooperate. The last step was pure chaos. And this was just part of chaos. And when officials and when advisors and attorneys like this hear, hey, so we're gonna cause chaos and then hope that there's some kind of martial law that's declared. And then Donald Trump can say, I'm still president. We never actually certified that. It was going down to the very last second of whatever we can do to avoid. That's the question. What is it that he was trying to avoid? But then in avoiding it, what you have is more charges like this, actually trying to corrupt an entire election and having a full plan in multiple steps to do something like this. It says so much what's going on. And again, so we talked about the food order and we talked about how Cipollone was talking about the reasons behind this. They tied so many knots together in just yesterday's testimony. It's astounding. There's not one moment from that testimony yesterday where you can say, yeah, that's a throwaway moment. Everything was connected.
Yes, yes. So many explosive moments. Here's another one which proves that not only did Trump and his innermost circle know it was a crime, but they knew that the people who were at the rally, the Stop the Steal rally, the peaceful rally that organizers had no idea was going to manifest into a full blown attack on the Capitol. Oh my God, we didn't say that. We said march to the Capitol. What you do there, you know, you can lead a horse to the water, but you can't force him to drink type thing, but he's probably gonna drink the water. So did they know that that mob was armed? Did they know that mob was angry? Here is what Cassidy Hutchinson says about all that.
But when we were in the offstage announce tent, I was part of a conversation. I was in the vicinity of a conversation where I overheard the president say something to the effect of, you know, I don't effing care that they have weapons. They're not here to hurt me. Take the effing mags away. Let my people in. They can march to the Capitol from here. Let the people in. Take the effing mags away.
Take the effing mags away. And mags is a reference to these roadblocks, to the security that was put in place for that march, where officials were stopping protesters because they were armed, because they had weapons. Not clear exactly what weapons those were. I am looking definitely for more detail on, you know, how many had guns, how many were armed with more than just, you know, flex cuffs, etc. Pepper spray, tear gas, all the things that we know they had. But Trump, because he's obsessed with his own image, didn't want it to look like the January 6th rally was empty. Oh, don't worry, bro. We saw it later. There were a lot of you. Like, hats off, JR. There were a lot of insurrectionists.
Just not enough, apparently. Because again, he wanted to pack the house. And again, allowing people with firearms by the mags, which would have identified, and Secret Service would have had to confiscate their weapons. Number one, the folks with the weapons didn't want to have to give up their weapons. And number two, Donald Trump didn't want them to have to give up their weapons because they needed those weapons for the attack. Number one, and number two, they needed to fill the house. Actually, I'm sorry, let me flip those. Number one, it was to fill the ellipse so that his speech could look better, because that's his number one objective. And number two, it's bring the weapons, because after this, we're gonna march down to the Capitol with our firearms and then just kind of just brandish them, I guess. Not really use them. We're just gonna hang out and act like we're just doing this for fun. Now, you mentioned you were gonna check into that. I did on my show this morning. I did check into it. Multiple people were arrested and charged with having firearms. The Capitol Police also pointed that out. People had firearms, AR-15s, guns on their hips, hiding in trees. There were firearms that day.
No, insane. And yet, they're not coming for me. They're not trying to get me. So why do you guys worry? Oh, hey, Secret Service, I know you're trying to protect the president. Don't worry, I'm safe. You guys, you're all gonna die, but I am safe. I mean, it's absolute. The ego, this guy will stand on a den of skulls if it means he's the one who gets to stand on top of it, right? Like, he just a pile of it, like that straight up Game of Thrones style. And I don't know what that says. I don't know, JR, you tell me in terms of your supporter, what do you make of this? They're not coming for me. They're coming for all of these other never Trumpers who I just decided was a never Trumper this moment.
I always ask myself that question, because it happened also in a previous January 6th hearing testimony when they talked about how much he robbed his supporters and defrauded them and said, look, we need your money. You got to send us some donations so we can fight this election fraud, because, you know, we actually won this election. And then the deep state and the election voting machines, they all ruled against me. And people fed him hundreds of millions of dollars. And he used that hundreds of million dollars to pay people for speeches at the ellipse, to pay himself probably some more debts. Actually, no, he doesn't pay off debts, to pocket that money. And I always asked, I said, so when supporters hear this, how do you break this all down and say, okay, that makes sense, because you have to have an excuse in your head. And then when it comes to hearing about how he said, as long as they're not, I mean, I know they're not gonna hurt me, who would they hurt? And if you're in support of somebody who says, as long as they don't hurt me, how do you feel safe?
Yeah.
It's just not America. So actually what it is, and I discovered this, is they just aren't listening. There's folks who were mad yesterday because we were talking about this and said, look at these people upset at Donald Trump. I can't believe it. I couldn't care less what's said there. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't care less what's being revealed, because if you hear it, you might have to rethink your position.
In my opinion, all these guys are middlemen, right? And it's helpful for the nation and the state of democracy to understand all of the checks and balances, as much as many of them failed, but that were in place to try and rein in the president. Like, just on some, like, me asking what the hell was going down that day, how did folks get so close and so far, what was happening internally, it's good to have this record. Does it matter for the MAGA base? No. He has to directly call out the insurrectionists and say all these like disgusting, unkempt, like supporters of mine, I don't know them. They're not with me. He needs to say that, but he will never say that. And until he says that, they think that they're completely in lockstep. Even if some of them are serving time for what they did on January 6th, they're completely, all the other guys in the middle, including Mike Pence, which, by the way, one quote we don't have, but Cassidy Hutchinson did testify that even when Donald Trump heard that the hang Mike Pence chants were happening, he was like, yeah, good. He should be.
Have at it. Hey, by the way, just really fast. I'm looking forward to Donald Trump also calling his supporters raggedy as well. Unkempt, filthy, fingernails dirty. You guys go home. That's what I'd like to see.
Yeah. No, and it'll never happen, right? Because it's just this like pipeline between the bowels of the country, the bowels of the internet, and, you know, the top doo-doo in charge. But finally, let's progress from there, because probably the most jaw-dropping testimony from Cassidy Hutchinson was when she says that as staff and the Secret Service tried to drive Donald Trump away from the January 6th Stop the Steal rally after everything was done, and he said, I'll be there, we're going to the Capitol, blah. He wanted to go to the Capitol still. And everyone around him was like, nah, we're going back to the Oval Office. And here's what happened next.
The president said something to the effect of, I'm the effing president, take me up to the Capitol now. To which Bobby responded, sir, we have to go back to the West Wing. The president reached up towards the front of the vehicle to grab at the steering wheel. Mr. Engel grabbed his arm, said, sir, you need to take your hand off the steering wheel. We're going back to the West Wing. We're not going to the Capitol. Mr. Trump then used his free hand to lunge towards Bobby Engel. And when Mr. Renato had recounted this story to me, he had motioned towards his clavicles.
How does such a small hand reach for big Secret Service clavicles? Like, I don't know. I feel like it's false testimony just on those grounds alone. No, of course not. We'll talk about, you know, whether Cassidy Hutchinson has any reason to lie, but this by far, Trump trying to grab the steering wheel off of his top Secret Service agent, that's Bobby Engel, who she's talking about. And then when he grabs the president's hand, little president hands, little doo-doo sticky fingers, try to reach for his clavicle. I just love that he tried, like old man tries a strong arm like Secret Service agent. And yet it's insane. It's insane that he would take it to that degree. And you wonder, I have so many questions, JR. Did this happen? How did it happen? And also, what the hell did Donald Trump think he was gonna do once at the Capitol?
I had a theory on that I pointed out before. But again, when you're just thinking from one emotional moment to the next, which Donald Trump is, and not getting his way, you have to, there's jokes that said about, you know, Donald Trump acts like a 6-year-old. You really do have to act like he's a petulant 6-year-old that isn't getting his way. He's just in a grown man's body. So then he's shoving people aside. No, you're gonna, so if you grab the steering wheel, if all these things that happened, that again, she relayed, I think she said that another White House aide, Tony Arnotto, was relaying this. So she wasn't in the actual car, that if this went down the way it did, he's reaching at one Secret Service agent, grabbing at another, grabbing steering wheels, and then reaching at clavicles. And then that's gonna be, as I heard, potentially disputed, because there's gonna be these small differences in potentially what happened in those situations because she wasn't exactly there. But no, I think his plan let's go down there and like be triumphant and stand in front of the Capitol like, I'm your leader. You're declaring martial law. He needed the scene. Again, he wanted the ellipse full. He wanted his people armed. He wanted to make sure they were still with him when he gets down there and he leads the charge, not the physical charge, but after all the madness has happened and everything is upside down, he's going to stand there and be like,
yep,
I'm your leader. I really do think so. It sounds ridiculous. And the reason why it does.
Macho man, right? Macho man, you got some dry ice. You don't even need the dry ice because everything's on fire. Just.
Bro, I'm telling you, that's what he wanted. I mean, I'm not telling you that on a factual basis. That's my assumption.
Okay, well, let's, first of all, let's imagine if he did get to the Capitol, like you're saying, he wanted to be there to reign over it all. Like a little bit of me is like, that would have made me so angry. Like that would have made me so insanely angry. And yet the photo op, the photo of this president standing in front of his mess that he made, the bogs that he stirred up, right? The like the logs of this country he unlifted and picked all the grubs out of and just like, you know, put up tactical gear on the grubs and then they, you know, fanned out in front of the Capitol and there he is, top grub. Like that image, you don't come back from that. Oh, sure, like the militias and the nut jobs will love you, but you don't come back from that and run again as president.
I don't think he's looking to come back.
No,
if that had happened, yeah. But also, yeah. I mean, the plan was to be no more presidential elections.
You're just there. Yeah. Oh, I'm king now, right? And like, and I just like the image was hard enough to watch. Image with then him reigning over it all, like, ooh, which you wonder, would it even have dawned on him what's going on, or would he have loved it? Would we have seen him like cackling with like firelight in his eyes? You know, like what's going on there?
It was the thought. I think that's, we know he's about image. You know, he's about crowds. We know he's about being the guy and being in the spotlight, things being said and shown a certain way about him. We know he's obsessive about that. This was an image looking thing. He wanted to come at the right time and complete it.
Yeah.
So even if he made it, I wonder what could have happened. Even if they did listen to him and get him to the Capitol, even though it didn't work out for him in that manner, where would he have been? I actually almost wish he did.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. And as JR mentioned, this is secondhand. Hutchinson was not there in the vehicle when this allegedly happened. It was relayed to her. And apparently the United States Secret Service is saying that they would like to testify to maybe either deny or corroborate or clarify what Cassidy Hutchinson testified to. So according to the Independent, the United States Secret Service has been cooperating with the select committee since its inception in spring 2021. Actually, this is a statement from the Secret Service. And will continue to do so, including by responding on the record to the committee regarding the new allegations surfaced in today's testimony. The NBC News correspondent Peter Alexander also reports that a source close to the Secret Service told him that Mr. Engel is prepared to testify. Again, this is the head Secret Service agent to testify that Mr. Engel and the driver that day are prepared to testify that neither man was assaulted. Okay, so this could be nothing happened to me. It could be, you know, I'm strong, nuh-uh. Or it could be like, yeah, there was an attempt, or maybe there was a little bit of a kerfuffle. Nobody was hurt.
It's all about the details, right? And that's what's going to potentially, they're hoping, I think, to be the one thing they say, well, it wasn't his left hand, it was his right hand. So therefore, everything that Cassidy Hutchinson said is actually false. Right. And then relay that to everything else that she testified over yesterday. Now, the one potential problem that could happen here is if they've really crossed their T's and dotted their I's is, hey, come on in, Secret Service agents. Tell us what you want to tell us. And if it happens to not be matched up with what maybe someone else can also corroborate, that could become a problem. I wonder if there's anyone else that might give some other kind of testimony or that already has and they want to reveal that. I don't know.
Absolutely. Don't know. And would they even testify without possibly revealing more? I mean, you subject yourself to, I think what Cassidy Hutchinson is honestly bravely subjected herself to. She doesn't have a lot to lose. She doesn't have a lot to gain. I'm really disgusted by the amount of trash talking about her, but of course, par for the course, a young woman is speaking before the country against Donald Trump. I mean, honestly, do we need to guess how she's going to be treated? Anyway,
I'm sorry. Last one. It is dangerous. They were saying the reason they made this as a surprise testimony is because they're worried for her safety already. My last thought.
Hey, back on the Damage Report from Jessica Fiorentini with J.R. Jackson and a big news Wednesday. Let's get in to this. So, is there another pandemic in the United States that's being mishandled currently? It seems that the rollout in response to the outbreak of monkeypox in the United States might fit that bill. There are many, many cases of monkeypox, tens of thousands of cases of monkeypox, and only now is the Biden administration seeming to have ordered vaccines in response. So the Biden administration will be sending out tens of thousands of vaccine doses to clinics nationwide in an effort to control a record US monkeypox outbreak that many experts say is far larger than the official count of 306 cases officials announced on Tuesday. I misspoke. I said tens of thousands. We're talking hundreds. We got tens of thousands of vaccines. One thing to know about monkeypox, it is sexually transmitted, and it seems to be particularly affecting people, men who have sex with other men, which of course I'm sure will be a great opportunity for the right to ignore it and blame gay people. Tight, tight, tight. Luckily, at least our government currently does not fall under that bill. So the US Department of Health and Human Services will send 56,000 doses of Jynneos vaccine immediately to areas affected with high transmission. An additional 240,000 doses will be distributed over the next few weeks, with even more to come this summer and fall. Officials expect to make at least 1.6 million doses available by the end of the fall, which is great. And interestingly, this vaccine works a little bit differently. So let's read more about it. It is a two dose Jynneos vaccine. It's been approved by the Food and Drug Administration, and it not only prevents infection, but it can be used to stop an infection after a person is exposed. Rochelle Walensky, head of the CDC, said that people should get vaccinated within 2 weeks of exposure, but that the vaccine works better the sooner it's given, and the doses are given 28 days apart. Now, it is important to know that the fatality associated with monkeypox is far lower than other kinds of pandemics like COVID-19. A lot of symptoms can disappear on their own within a few weeks, but for those who are immunocompromised, people who are pregnant, people with weak any kind of like lung issues, pre-existing conditions, etc., they can have complications and possibly die. Looking at the states with the highest number of cases is California, New York, Illinois, and Florida, as well as Washington, D.C., according to the latest count from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. New York City and Washington, D.C. were among the first cities to begin vaccinating at-risk groups for monkeypox, including men who have sex with men, reporting multiple partners or at least one anonymous partner within 14 days. With just 1,000 doses from the CDC to distribute at one clinic, New York, which began administering shots on June 23rd, quickly ran out. So this is the thing. It might sound like it's a lot of vaccines, but many public health experts and officials are saying this is not enough. Like, this will quickly spread. And again, because viruses are not homophobic, this can and will and does spread to people outside of people who have sex, men who have sex with men. So just remember that if public health experts are sounding the alarms on this, that it is far more widespread, we should really pay attention. So I just want to jump down to the National Coalition of STD Directors. They put out this tweet saying, our perspective, we've already lost control of this outbreak. We think there are many more cases and we need to act now to get control of the outbreak. I wanted to go to this Washington Post piece about it. The administration initially limited the testing on monkeypox to several dozen public health laboratories, which some patients and physicians blame for delays in getting results. Experts also warned that the strategy hampered early detection of some infections and led to additional spread, raising the likelihood of the virus, which has repeatedly emerged in Central and West Africa for decades, becoming endemic in the United States too. So less funding, Not enough testing. Where have we seen this before? This is, you know, it is so predictable that we are not only going to have things like COVID-19, but then monkeypox and what's the next thing, you know? Like, it is going to keep going until we have a public health infrastructure in this country that is actually robust and actually universal, until we are funding things like vaccines and public health more than we are funding the military right now, which is not keeping us safe.
What does that do with fear though, Francesca? We have to fund things that we're afraid, that we're gonna make sure we think will stop our fears, but there's always more there. I was concerned about this because a couple months ago, even when this whole started, when President Biden mentioned it, and I think he had a little press conference, he pointed out, hey, there's like single number of cases. And he pointed out, I think it was Florida where the first couple of cases were, and maybe one, maybe Illinois, possibly, if I remember correctly. But that was the beginnings. And then it's so quick and easy to go, oh yeah, that's right, 3 cases. Whew. That's something that it's an endemic in another country somewhere else, whole region in the world somewhere else. So no, it doesn't affect us. And that's how you end up with hundreds of cases, potentially more that haven't even been accounted for. Because then, as you pointed out, it's like Groundhog Day, that old movie. We keep seeing the same thing happen over and over and over again. And I was worried that because there's still the vaccine fatigue, or there's still the societal factors of, hey, we shouldn't be listening to experts and scientists and people that talk about how spreads of diseases and viruses actually happen. We're still on that feel. I was hoping that it wouldn't go to that route, which I don't think it's really been the case. It just kind of hasn't been talked about. Mm-hmm. And in limited number of testing, as you pointed there, again, maybe because there was this assumption, yeah, it's not really happening. And there's that same mistake again. And the only thing that comes lucky from this is that, as you pointed out, it's just not as easily transmissible, not from the same means transmissible through folks, but it still transmits.
Right, absolutely. And I think it's important to call it out. I mean, kudos to the public health officials who are saying, and experts who are like calling the administration out. Like, you know, you were late on it. And who knows, you know, what if it explodes? You don't want this again on your hands. But how easily we can ignore it if it's not affecting us.
I wonder if they were afraid of people's response if they took it more seriously. Be like, well, we don't want to have to get pushback from us talking about vaccines for something else.
Of course.
It's just, that's my question, only because we've seen the fear of the Democratic Party when they're in power, specifically this establishment wing of it, and their concerns about people being like, you guys suck. Like, okay, yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. No, of course. Oh, we've had enough about pandemics. We're going to ignore the next one. The following we'll pay attention to. Let's just quickly jump into this next segment, beginning with this.
It was a little pinch, but it was okay. Emma was really glad to have Daddy and Baby David there with him. Baby David, where are you?
I had a lot of questions about Elmo getting the COVID vaccine. Was it safe? Was it the right decision? I talked to our pediatrician so I could make the right choice. I learned that Elmo getting vaccinated is the best way to keep himself, our friends, neighbors, and everyone else healthy and enjoying the things they love.
Bless Sesame Street. That's just adorable, right? Not only now can children under 5 be vaccinated, but that it is, you know, the best way to keep them safe. Not only them, but yourself, your families, your communities, the schools. Keep them all safe. Who would have a problem with this message except Senator Ted Cruz, who put out this tweet immediately triggered by Elmo and his dad, saying, thanks Sesame Street for saying parents are allowed to have questions. You then have Elmo aggressively advocate for vaccinating children under 5. But you cite zero evidence for this. Learn more. Visit cruz.senate.gov, in which he has multiple questions, including, we can go to this, how many healthy children ages 5 and under without pre-existing medical conditions have died or been hospitalized from COVID or its variants? Right? So again, we're talking about pre-existing medical conditions, because you always have to slap that on any discussion about COVID-19. But also, these are questions to which there are answers. These are questions to which there are actual statistics. So UNICEF actually reported that Of the 17,200 deaths reported in those under 20 years of age, 53% occurred among adolescents aged 10 to 19, and 47% among children ages 0 to 9. Right? Now, so there are stats that show that, yes, young kids can actually die from COVID-19. Young kids can also spread COVID-19, despite the amount of propaganda we've been given that said, oh no, kids aren't, they don't transmit everything. Then why was there an uptick in cases when mask mandates stopped in schools? Huh? Why did that, what was a weird correlation, right? How many people know people who got sick from a child and then that person died? I do. Anyone else? Sound off. So the other thing, vaccines help prevent kids from getting COVID-19. But although COVID-19 in children, and this is according to Johns Hopkins Medicine, COVID-19 in children is sometimes milder than in adults. Some kids infected with coronavirus can get severe lung infections, become very sick, yes, and require hospitalization. This is especially important to remember in light of variants, which can be very contagious. The current vaccines are still effective in preventing severe illness from current variants of the virus, according to Dr. Six Samuels and Messina of Johns Hopkins Medicine. So yeah, it will prevent them. Is this the same dose that adults are getting? No, that's why they took months to roll out. JR, your parent, I know your kid's older than 5, but when he could be vaccinated, mm-hmm. how did that help ease your mind a little bit?
It was a big deal. Look, because as you guys, you know, you found out, I just got over it myself a week ago. And guess where I got it? Hate to put him on blast, but my kid, because that's how these things work. You live with folks and if nothing else, this shows the singular thought process of many conservatives. It's, hey, so if it doesn't directly kill the one person that we're talking about, then why do we care? It's like mm-hmm. we don't live in a society. It's like we don't live around each other. It's like we don't breathe the same air in many cases. Just ignore all those normal societal factors, because Ted Cruz is still stuck on the same thing. Because these same things were talked about with Sesame Street back when the vaccines were first rolled out for folks that weren't 5 years old, that it was safe for adults and people that were immunocompromised or maybe had just particular needed to be in the front of the line because of pre-existing conditions, all that stuff.
Right.
When it came out in Sesame Street, I think it was another character. It wasn't Elmo the first time, it was Zoe or someone.
Yes.
Who was like, oh, look, I need to get over the fear of a shot because I need to get vaccinated. Oh my God, Sesame Street, how could you? Little did they know in 1975, Sesame Street did the same thing. Because right. It's always been the same process. Nothing is different as far as trying to vaccinate people to avoid a spread of a very dangerous, in our case, new a virus that was presented to us. But they have to keep going back to the same well of, look at how Sesame Street is corrupting your children. They go to the emotional line every time and say that someone's coming after your kids, your wife, or your face. And then we have to stop them before they do what? Protect you? It's the logic gets cut off right there. And now yeah. Elmo and his dad are his public enemy number one for Ted Cruz. What has Ted Cruz been doing?
I mean,
except this.
You know, to be fair, it's been a while since the internet owned him completely and handed him his ass. So he was like, you know, obviously he gets off on it, I'm sorry, but he's like, give it to me. And also, there's nothing else to talk about other than the January 6th commission, right? He's not going to talk about that. Exactly. So we're going to talk about Sesame Street. Anyway, we have to take our second break. When we come back, another right winger triggered, of course. All right, back on the Damage Report from Jessica Fiorentini and J.R. Jackson, getting into more shenanigans, some justice coming down, and and some slaps that are being retracted. So we'll see. Yeah. but let's, can we go quickly into this video? Can we start off with this next video?
Celebrity Class coming out and being very upset. So Olivia Rodrigo, who I will admit I had not heard of until the last 5 minutes because I'm not a teeny bopper. Olivia Rodrigo was with another person named Lily Allen. And I will admit that I had not heard of Lily Allen either. In fact, I was mixing her up with Lily Tomlin when I was looking this up. But apparently they are both people who dress like 17-year-old teeny boppers and prance around while breathing heavily into microphones, recording songs that do not have capital letters in them. If you look at Olivia Rodrigo's song list, apparently she's like E.E. Cummings. All capital letters are forbidden. It's like favorite crime, no capital F, no favorite C. Good for you, no capital G. U is spelled letter U, and four is the number four. So, you know, brilliant expositors on the state of American law and the existential issue of when human life begins. Olivia Rodrigo and Lily Allen, they go to a concert where they prance around in two pieces and talk about how abortion is really, 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 really important. And also F those justices, F them.
Like, did everyone's butthole just get even tight? Like, I feel like I look at him and I'm like, oh God, I need to relax. Like, I need, whew, like the tightest butt, just, I'm sorry, but like, he's so bottled. The most backed up man in the United States, the most backed up. I apologize if we have to censor any of that, but it's so true. So here is Ben Shapiro taking time to basically call out teeny boppers, whose music he doesn't listen to, because why would he? He's a middle-aged man. And first of all, keep Lily Tomlin's name out your mouth, okay? Don't ever say her name, because she does not endorse you or support you, but you know, obviously celebrated comedian. So he's mad because at the Glastonbury Music Festival, Olivia Rodrigo, who is a pop star, and Lily Allen, who is a pop star from the UK, both spoke out against the Supreme Court ruling that overturned Roe v. Wade. They were quite outspoken. Let's just take a quick look at what Olivia Rodrigo had to say.
I'm devastated and terrified. And so many women and so many girls are going to die because of this. And I wanted to dedicate this next song to the five members of the Supreme Court who have showed us that at the end of the day, they truly don't give a shit about freedom. This song goes out to the justices, Samuel Alito, Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, Amy Coney Barrett, and Brett Kavanaugh. We hate you.
There you had it. Olivia Rodrigo using her time. Then the two of them broke into the song F You Very Much, which is a Lily Allen song. Even I know that. Come on, Ben. But he's mad, JR, because there's no capital letters. they're incredible linguistic expository of justice in this nation. Like, will die.
Every once in a while, I got to give them their props, because I do believe people like Ben Shapiro believe all the madness that they say. So I'm not going that far. But there's times when he knows he's being funny, and he deadpans it. And he's like, teeny boppers, this is 1952. Teeny boppers, Lily Tomlin. And you're talking about young people. They have no idea what the hell any of that is. For good reason, because it was 100 years before they were born. But you're talking about teeny boppers doing this. Nobody relates to that. But it's just kind of weird. Why would he choose to say teeny boppers over and over again when talking about Olivia Rodrigo and the capitalization of their, bro. Again, every generation has their sets of music, entertainment, movies, television that the previous generation is like, oh, I can't believe these kids are doing this now. But you're not supposed to dive into it at, I don't know how old Ben Shapiro is, 45 years old, and try and push this whole thing. But the reason behind it is, it's because you have to find a way to attack young folks that are now bold enough and open enough and have platforms to say things that change and affect his society's thought process when it comes to things. Yeah. These are the type of folks that have always been in control of of the way society thinks and our judgments on certain people and who's acceptable in certain ways and not. They have to try and take it back from young people who are changing the landscape by saying, I can't believe they don't capitalize their songs, and I can't believe they use vulgar language in their music, because no one has ever done that before. No, you have to try to find a way to attack on something else, because you're losing when it comes to the actual policies. And in this case, the overturning of Roe versus Wade, they're not going to take it. They're just not going to take it. But you need to find a different way to attack.
Well, there is a robust library of music over on DailyWire.com and Daily Wire Plus, and also with great movies that have terrible plot lines. So if you want music about wholesome things, like lollipops and very, very dry, dry, you know what? You can go there. That's what I would recommend.
All right. Who's he speaking to, right? He's speaking to.
You're so irrelevant. He's so irrelevant. Like, oh, please, please continue to make yourself irrelevant. And all of those, I love the little Shapiro stands. You're like, oh my God, bless your virginal heart. just please explore your sexuality for all of us.
Because, you know, by the way, there's times when I do complain about the way different things are. And I can't believe this song was a minute and a half and he said the same thing over and over and over again. I have those little complaints. I know that I'm aging. I know that I have the pre-generational thing of thinking my thing is best and back to the good old days. Again, across the board, it's not just about entertainment. It goes to sports. I'm a big basketball fan. I used to play that too. So then you go, hey, why is everybody so soft now? Yeah, I'm one of those guys now. But it doesn't mean you have to then go on any kind of, well, you can if you'd like, but it's not a winning argument, put it that way, to say, yeah, I can't believe you kids nowadays are so soft and you think that Steph Curry is, it's like, just stop complaining. It's not a winning argument. Trust me, my son tells me every day, yeah, stop talking.
Well, let's quickly jump into this next thing. A little bit of justice was served. Ghislaine Maxwell was sentenced to 20 years in prison for aiding Jeffrey Epstein, notorious billionaire and pedophile, in what is likely the most extensive worldwide sex trafficking operation in recent history. Again, she's a former socialite and she was convicted in December on 5 of the 6 charges she faced. The jury came to their decision after 40 hours of deliberation spanning 6 days. In addition to sex trafficking, Maxwell was convicted of conspiracy to entice individuals under the age of 17 to travel in interstate commerce with the intent to engage in illegal sexual activity, conspiracy to transport individuals under the age of 17. I'm rereading the same thing. Transporting an individual under 17 with the intent to engage in illegal sexual activity. I think these are all the same charge, but there's a lot of them. I'm just gonna keep on saying that. Minors trafficked for sex. And there were a number of victims of Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell who did speak out about it. Many of the women who spoke out about being introduced to Epstein by Maxwell herself, including Jufre, this is Virginia Jufre, who said Maxwell procured her for Epstein after spotting her at Mar-a-Lago, fun, in 2000 when she was just 16. I want to be clear about one thing, without question, Jeffrey Epstein was a terrible pedophile, but I would never have met Jeffrey Epstein if not for you, Jufre said in a statement read by her lawyer. For me and for so many others, you opened the door to hell. And that door now is a prison cell for Ghislaine Maxwell. She did have a little bit to say, not a lot of empathy, not a lot, didn't seem to have that much empathy, didn't seem to admit her crimes. She said she deeply empathized with the victims, acknowledges that she has been convicted for helping Epstein. And it was the first time she had made those public remarks. So she said, literally said the words, I empathize. Was there a sorry? I didn't hear a sorry in there. Not much of a difference that would have made. JR, any thoughts on this?
Real fast. I mean, yeah, there's no empathy, but there's no sorry. And also there's an appeal. So it seems like she doesn't like this. Maybe it's just standard, but she doesn't like the ruling. But now rich, powerful people, maybe we could have a precedent for actually putting them away. And it should be longer. Keep it real.
Absolutely. And by the way, the prosecutors were seeking 35 years. She should be lucky that it's just 20. All right, there is more on YouTube. If you're streaming on linear, go there. See you after this. Rodney Fong writes in with a super chat saying, hey JR, you're one of the best and strongest critical thinkers. Thank you for what you do.
Wow. I'm gonna put that on my resume. Thank you.
And I'm gonna put, because Rialan N says, Francesca is glowing, and that goes on my resume. Look, I don't know how to do spreadsheets, but I'm glowing, so.
All I'm gonna say is, I said the same thing this morning. So it must be true, I corroborate that.
Bay Photo says, thank you for your super chat. And then the Orange Moses was like, Secret Service, let my people in. Seriously, he's like parting the trash waters. That's what he wanted. He would have, you know what? Or he would have been like cowering and shaking underneath like a police shield or something. Just like,
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.